Welcome to the Senior Hour, which is sponsored by Providence Holy Cross Medical Center, IMEC Med Spa, and Comfort Keepers in Home Care. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host,
Dr. Thomas Palucky,
on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. This is a show for, about, and by seniors, giving information to advance one's quality of life. And our first guest this morning is a palliative care nurse, Leah Phillips. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's good to see you. And like I said before, I love your jacket.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's nice to be here. And I know that Dr. Kalani had asked me to come. She's our palliative care physician. And I've come with her during senior hour prior.
Yes.
And she wasn't able to make it. And I was like, sure, I'll come.
Good. Now, tell us, what is palliative care?
So palliative care is a medical specialty that that really deals with quality of life, symptom management, supportive care for patients that have chronic or serious illness.
Making sure they take their meds on time, that kind of thing?
Maybe for the home-based palliative care, our service is strictly within Holy Cross Hospital. So we see patients in the ICU. We see patients in oncology, step-down, medical floors, ER. So we get consulted hopefully early on when patients come in and they may have a chronic or serious illness such as, you know, kidney disease or heart failure or cancer. We get consulted by the physician, and then see them generally within 24 hours. We do an evaluation and really meet them where they're at in their admission.
Oh, so you're not involved in home care then?
No, but we do have a home-based palliative care program. So as we follow our patients through their hospitalization, if they would meet criteria for home-based palliative care, we put forth a referral for our home-based team to see them. And the home-based team includes a physician, nurse practitioner, social worker. And generally, it coincides with a home health agency.
Oh, I see. Okay. Because one of our sponsors is in home care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so home care generally is the primary, where the palliative care maybe touches bases with the patient and families, maybe like a week or two after admission, just to start gaining information and seeing where they're at with symptom management, see how they're doing with all their therapies, and a really good resource should their condition change and their family is worried about fever or infection or something that a physician can make a visit at the home and prevent them from having to come back to the hospital. So they would prescribe them antibiotics and really just supportive care if they feel like the patient is too ill to be at home. They would refer them back to the ER.
That's interesting because my husband had in-home care for quite a while, mm-hmm. and then he got too bad, and we had to put him in the hospital. Right. And they offered to have him go into a nursing home, which he said, absolutely not. He said, I'd rather stay here in the hospital than go to a nursing home. And that's what he was in there for 5 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Before he passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But he was so well taken care of. He really was.
Yeah.
And I don't know, he would have been miserable in a nursing home.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, you know, under Medicare guidelines, under, you know, hospital, you know, under the hospital regulations, the acute care hospital is really for acute illness that we manage, but if it gets to a point where, you know, patients are stable, you know, I know that they feel like they get really, really good care in the hospital, but they do have to have a discharge plan. If our, such as your husband, if his condition had worsened and he met criteria to stay more for end-of-life care, where we needed to escalate pain medications or escalate care that revolved around symptom management, we would recommend for our hospice team to come in and provide that level of care.
That's what happened.
Where he transitioned to hospice. So, yeah, so that would be a transitional care as long as he would meet those criteria to stay inpatient.
Yeah, well, he didn't want any part of a nursing home. Absolutely not. He said, no, leave me here. I said, okay, you're here.
So what I'm hearing is there is a pretty important distinction between palliative care and hospice care. And unfortunately, I know that a lot of people don't know the difference between palliative. As soon as they hear palliative, they're like, oh, yeah, that's end-of-life care. And that's not the case. Dr. Kalani said 80% survival rate of your palliative care team at Holy Cross. That is outstanding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is not end of life. And that is a very clear distinguish between palliative care and hospice care. Hospice care is really when patients no longer desire or there are no further disease-modifying treatments, curative treatments, then, you know, families can opt for hospice level of care at home, at a facility, you know, wherever their insurance allows them to be and wherever the family's preferences for them to go. Palliative care, it doesn't matter the age. It doesn't matter, you know, the diagnoses, really. It just is a... I could get a breast cancer and get palliative care. You know, it's for something, you know, for patients that have chronic or serious illness and it affects their quality of life. So if I'm afraid that I'm going to lose my income, you know, that having treatment for my breast cancer is going to make me so sick that I'm losing out on time with my family or, you know, my concerns, palliative care is appropriate.
Okay, and one more distinction, just so I'm perfectly clear on this. Prior to meeting you and Dr. Kalani, my idea of palliative was just pain management, pain relief. But from what I'm hearing from you and Dr. Kalani is it really isn't just about pain management. It's more about patient advocacy. Like there is a specialized team that is a higher level of care that are really focused on making sure that everything is taken care of. Is that more to the point?
That is. And we are board certified. We specialize in palliative care. And really, it is whole person care. So it's not just a disease. It's not just a symptom. You know, somebody's illness affects their whole family, their whole family unit. And so our role is really meeting them where they're at in their journey and just providing them, you know, options for care. And I know right now I just finished up a nursing research study that had to do with aromatherapy on oncology patients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you, you know, I would love to offer that in our hospital. And that is a goal of mine. And my nursing research article will be published in August.
And congratulations. So really, yes.
Thank you.
I know how hard it is to get published.
Oh, it was an experience.
Yes.
It was quite an experience. I'm, you know, unfortunately, my project started a little before COVID. Mm. And so, you know, I had specific criteria to meet my patient population. And I came up a little short. So instead of having, like, say, 64 patients, I had half that number.
Right.
But I was able to work with our nursing research team and really proceed. So I'm happy to get that.
We need more research like that. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you can have aromatherapy in casinos, you should be able to have it in hospitals. I don't see where the conflict is. Even in a advanced imaging facility, mm-hmm. they are now using aromatherapy for people who are a little uptight about being shoved in a tube for half an hour. And it's working.
So. It is working. And there's a lot of studies that are being done and around aromatherapy and how effective it is. I know that there's a lot of, you know, terms that you can't use a medical diagnosis along with a oil,
yeah,
because then makes it medicinal, and
right.
that's and then, no.
yeah, I unfortunately know all too well about that controversy firsthand. Mm-hmm. And but the it doesn't. I just don't understand why it needs to be a published study for people to accept that, hey, this just makes people feel better. Why can we not just have some lavender oil diffused in the room?
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to say I'm at the older end of my nursing career, and I'm hoping that by the time I retire that I am able to implement that mm-hmm. and get that available to our patients, because I know that if I am a patient in the hospital, I would want that for me.
Sure.
I know that that would be very beneficial for me.
Now, you said they have aromatherapy in casinos?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've researched it. I mean, they have aromatherapy in high-end manufacturing facilities to boost productivity in the workforce. They have aromatherapy in casinos to make the patrons stay longer and spend more money. I mean, it is.
You're
this
kidding
is
me.
Very high level
really?
Research. Yeah, sure. And why you can't just borrow that research and apply it somewhere else? That it has to be in that setting in order for it to be acceptable.
Well, how do they manage to do that?
Do what?
Have aromatherapy in casinos.
It's in the air filtration movement system, the air handling.
Oh.
It used to be you walked into a casino and it would smell like an ashtray.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
They don't anymore.
No, that's
someone could
true.
Be smoking like two people away from you and you can't even smell it. And a lot of them don't even have it anymore. But still, a lot of them, you're like, interesting. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason they pick that smell. And high-end hotels, too. You walk into any five-star resort, there is an immediate smell that is very welcoming and very soothing.
Yeah.
Well, I would definitely welcome lavender.
Oh,
I
yes.
love
yes. And lavender is a very soothing, it's a very well-studied, that's probably the most studied oil. Is lavender, and it's very effective. You know, you roll it on patients' feet, or you put it, you know, by their pillow, or, you know, you just let them, you know, rub it in their palms and inhale it.
It's I have lavender growing in my backyard.
Aww.
And I cut it every once in a while, well, constantly, and bring it inside.
It's very soothing.
I love it. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it. I even have it in my bedroom.
Oh, yeah. So I diffuse all over lavender and all kinds of different oils. But that is, you know, that's, you know, from a holistic, from a, you know, whole person care. Those are just one of the things that we do in palliative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really just deal with the person's heart and soul.
Take care of.
Yeah, take care of them. Why I went in nursing.
Yeah, and any time that you can get somebody to relax, any medical protocol is going to be that much more effective.
Oh, yeah.
Because the whole experience is pretty scary. No matter how good the staff is, just the fact that you have to be in a hospital. Most people aren't there by choice. It can be highly stressful, but
sure. And I know that they've done quite a few studies to have lavender, like in an emergency room setting, where you know they were really gearing towards their staff
mm-hmm.
because it's so hot. You know, I come from an ER background, and you come with a lot of energy in the ED, and so you know having the aromatherapy and the workstations where the nurses started to feel a lot less stress, a lot less, you know,
it relaxes them.
It does. And then they're not so highly amped and they're able to go and really care for their patients well. So.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Really is.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, besides essential oils, what else is, the palliative? I know that's your baby.
And
again,
baby.
Congratulations on getting
you.
Published, especially during a pandemic. That is no small feat. What else is your program? You know, I am just so nicely surprised of finding out more and more about palliative care, because most of it, I believe, because, this is my belief, that palliative just means pain management.
Right.
And that is not the case. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that. And I also used to believe that palliative was, end-of-life care as well. And I don't think I'm alone in those misconceptions. So tell us more about your program.
Well, you're correct. A lot of people think palliative, and they're like, wait, I don't want palliative. That is not, because their first instinct is, why am I getting palliative?
Right.
Does my physician think I'm dying?
Right.
And it's like, absolutely not. No, we're here to let you be the best you can be for as long as you can be. And really, palliative care is not a terminal diagnosis. It is, a chronic or serious illness, and it could be at any age. We are a trauma center. We've had, 19-year-old palliative patients. So it's not an age thing. It's not a disease. It's just anybody that can have a life-threatening or, a serious, scary illness. That is when palliative is appropriate. And there's a lot of physicians that don't know what palliative is. They're like, my patient's not ready for palliative.
Now you do,
yeah. Right. Right.
Isn't it nice? You learn something new every day, don't
you? There you go. Well, I try.
Exactly. But it's not just physicians. It's nursing. It's other, other medical caregivers that really don't understand palliative care. And I'm glad that we're able to talk about it and get that information out there. So that people aren't afraid of palliative care. Because if anything, we are more advocating for patients than a lot. And, we have had physicians that have said, hey, I think my patient's about ready for hospice care. Can you go in as a palliative care provider and just kind of see where they're at?
Mm-hmm.
And, we review their medical record. We have conversation. We really dive deep and meet the families and the patients to find they wouldn't even qualify for hospice.
Right.
So that's not even an option. And, you have to have definitive diagnoses, and you have to have two physicians that say you're terminal, you're likely to pass away within the next year, and that you are no longer receiving any disease-modifying treatments, that you just want to focus on comfort at that point.
Yeah.
More palliative is more, hey, I'm still receiving my aggressive treatments, I'm getting blood transfusions, I'm getting my dialysis, I'm getting, all my medical management, and they're nowhere near hospice care.
Yeah. It just is. I used to get mad about stuff, but it is what it is. And unfortunately, everything comes down to being able to sustain a model of practice, a business. The hospital is a big business. And I love what you're doing, but at the same time, I'm sad that your department is necessary. When any patient walking into that hospital should be treated this way. And yet you need the bureaucracy to kick in order for somebody to get the kind of care that you provide in your unit.
Yeah, thank you. We're blessed to have Providence as, a very big supporter of the whole person care and palliative care.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so Leo, one more time, and thank you. I know you don't personally sponsor the show, but Providence Holy Cross does, and we're so appreciative to have such a caring facility. I mean, Providence does stand out in the crowd in a major way, and thank you for spending your time here today, helping everybody, including me, understand a little bit more about palliative care.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, we are on a break now. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Thomas Pilecki, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS.
When I'm 64.
Welcome back to the Senior Hour. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Thomas Pilecki, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. And our guest now is Cardin Ellis of Unipest. And your business is getting rid of pests.
Yes.
Does that mean adult pests or animal pests?
You know, I've heard every variation of that joke possible. With parents, it's usually children. With unhappily married people, it's the husband or the wife. Never the wife's fault, of course.
Oh, of course not.
You know, with seniors, I don't know. Seniors seem to get along really well. If they've made it 50 years, they've probably made whatever adjustments they need to. You know, so I always say the less feet, the more money it costs to kill.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you're thinking about that one, huh?
Yeah, that's like, interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, so it's a fun gig. I love our seniors in Santa Clara. They're pretty awesome. So, yeah, I'm happy where I'm at.
Wow. Okay, so what exactly does your company do?
Oh, gosh. I guess it's better.
Start number one, two, three, four.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, what don't we do? Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, so we are a full-service pest and termite control company. We also do wildlife trapping, bed bug jobs. We do a dry rot repair in homes, wood destroying organisms. Oh, goodness gracious. You have skunks or raccoons, you can call us. You have black widows and crickets. I mean, pretty much any living organism that makes you scream in your house that you don't want around. Right now, I'm dealing with flies and mosquitoes like crazy in Santa Clarita.
Oh, I bet you
are. Oh, that's what I'm getting a lot of calls for now. So, yeah, we're licensed to do pretty much everything, and we do pretty much everything. So you can call us for pretty much anything, and we get lots of those calls. It's fun. It's a cool job.
That's interesting because I used to have cat doors.
Oh, yeah.
One in the garage and one in my office. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the living room, and here comes a raccoon walking. He walks through my husband's model room because he came in through the back of the garage through one of those cat doors.
Well, because there's locals that are training him to do that. Did you know that?
You're kidding.
No, I was.
Anyway, this creature, and he was big.
Yeah.
Really big.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, what am I going to do now?
So I was.
I didn't move. I absolutely did not move.
Yeah. Nobody realizes how big they are until they realize their closest living relative is the North American black bear. They're basically miniature black bears that have semi-opposable thumbs.
You're kidding me.
No, and I'm not joking when I say there's locals that are training them. I was doing a subterranean termite inspection with a person that will remain nameless. But all of a sudden you hear a rustle in the backyard, and I'm talking with them about, oh, the termites in their house and so on and so forth. And the woman says, honey, they're here. And lo and behold, a family of four raccoons is descending from the tree line and slowly coming up, and they get out their food that they're feeding them, and the raccoons walk straight into the living room and take it out of their hands. You know what I'm saying? Through the doggy door that's on the sliding glass door, and then promptly leave. And I was like, oh, man, the next homeowner that buys your house when you guys sell this thing is literally going to have raccoons coming through that doggy door.
It's interesting. It's interesting because that raccoon went right into the kitchen where I fed the cat.
Yeah.
And they started – he started – or she or whatever it was – started eating the food.
Oh, yeah. No,
and
cat
I thought,
food?
Holy cow. Because there was dry food and wet food in there.
Yeah, cat food is super attractive. Okay. At the same time, you know, another thing that they love, and the reason why is raccoons thrive in Santa Clarita. I don't know how we ended up talking about just raccoons, but this is where we ended up going. Snails. You ever had escargot? You ever had French boiled or cooked snails in a meal?
Oh, yes. I love escargot.
Okay. So basically, those snails that you see all over the sidewalks that grow in all of the ground cover on the sides of the street, loaded with snails. Well, raccoons, they know how to take a mussel or a clam, bang it on a rock, take out the flesh from inside. There's... And they figured out that you can take snails, bang them on rocks, and then suck out the snail from inside. Huge source of protein. They love it. You want to see huge raccoons? Go up the street to the left off of Newhall, where all the apartments are, Valle del Oro. Walk around Valle del Oro at like 11 or 12 at night when you're coming home from work, and you will see some massive raccoons all in the aloe vera and the ice plants there just munching on snails. That's yeah. The audience can't see you shaking your head.
It's interesting because after that, I got one as a pet.
Oh.
And, oh, I loved that raccoon. She was just adorable. I had her fixed.
Okay.
And she stayed in the house unless I went out with her. And she
would
stay.
What was that like? You had a raccoon?
Oh, yes. She was adorable. She slept
really?
With me. Yeah.
And she it would just cuddle up and snooze? Oh, yes. I notice you say she because the males can be super destructive.
Well, I had her fixed at a veterinarian.
Okay. Wow.
And she was just adorable.
When was this? What state was that in?
This was here in Newhall.
Oh, I didn't even know that was legal. That's awesome.
Well, I don't know whether it was legal or not.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't care. Because
well, no, it's interesting. Some species are protected, some aren't. My grandparents here in California had a pet store before the Endangered Species Act was developed. And they had a spider monkey that lived in their house. It would eat with them at the dinner table. It had a little miniature chair, and they had a plate for it, and it would just eat right off of... And when I was in kindergarten, well, you know, just as well here, they came with a pet raccoons to
well,
class.
Well, they must have... It must have been legal, because I got it at a pet store.
Oh, rock on.
Here
okay.
locally, and this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And
but it just slept with you. It just cuddled with you
oh,
and everything.
Yeah, it was.
Were you a rock star when you went down the street with a raccoon on a leash?
Well, people would stop their cars.
Well, yeah, you're walking a raccoon. Of course they'd stop. That's awesome.
Is that your pet? I said, yes. I mean, the looks on their faces, it was incredible. And the dogs would run from it.
Really?
Yes.
And dude, you're kind of convincing me. I got to get a raccoon as a pet.
Oh, I loved her. She was just adorable.
Okay, so the next one I trap, instead of taking it to a shelter, I can take it to your house?
Well, my kids would not approve of that right now, because I don't have any more doggy doors or cat doors, because I don't have a kitty anymore. I lost her. And I thought, I can't get another one. It's too painful to lose, and they're so hard to train.
Oh, true that.
Kittens are, cats are. So anyway, I do without my kitties, but I have her on my computer at home. She's right there, and I've got lots of pictures of her here. So her name was Ginger.
Cool.
She was
awesome.
She was a calico. I had a. Had the two sisters. One was a black and white calico with a touch of ginger. And Ginger was also a calico, but she was ginger and white with just a couple of little spots of black. So they were calicos.
All right. Awesome. Cool.
All right, Carton, can we talk about Utipest?
Yeah,
all,
let's hit it.
At all.
I'm just, you know, I'm down, sure.
So, what I like about working with you, because I've had you come check out the house, and yeah. What the only way that I would have, are you okay with saying exterminator?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm fine with that, dude. Okay. I mean, that's what most people think we are, and it's still the keyword that's most searched on Google.
Okay, so, yeah, so. Plug, free plug there. The only way I would have an exterminator come in is if I knew they were environmentally sensitive. And do we we're having a problem because I make the classic, you know, suburban mistake of feeding the local wildlife.
Oh, are you the guy that puts out peanuts for the squirrels? Yeah. And for every one squirrel that comes during the day, 50 rats come at night?
Yes, that's me. Thank you very much. You're welcome, everybody. So, that, and I don't, you know, I hate to say, admit it, but I don't, I'm live and let live. I don't care. You know, I know it's not cool, but we love the, you know, having the wildlife come up, and even the ones that aren't so friendly or favorable. The issue was that not because the critters were coming, but because the fleas were staying.
Yeah.
The fleas stuck around, and they were getting our dogs. And we had you guys come out and use something that I'd never heard of before, but environmentally friendly pesticide. Yeah? So can we talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, environmental concerns are a big-time issue right now. There's been 30 or 40 years now of back and forth in the media about what all these terminologies mean, what is eco-friendly, what is green, so on and so forth. People want – this is how I boil down my ethos and my approach to pest control, right, is none of us want to be living with the detrimental pests, especially the ones like fleas, which can actually cause physical pain, spiders.
Disease, and, you know.
Disease, illness, bed bugs, so on and so forth.
Keep your dogs up all night long.
Yeah, exactly. So there's obviously what's called the nuisance threshold, where it actually starts bugging us and what actually starts to bug us. And we want people to live comfortably above – what that nuisance threshold is, right? Sorry, below what that nuisance threshold is, right? At the same token, you know, yeah, there's some things you want to be live and left live. I don't really have a problem with, you know, when I find out somebody's feeding the squirrels, as long as they're not leaving an excess out for the rats later.
Right.
Because
here's – can I – I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. Here's the thing. Those little critters hide the food. And that's what the skunks and the rats and the raccoons come after at night, are the little caches of food. So you just can't feed them in excess. Even though they look like they eat it all, they don't eat it all. They go and hide it.
Oh, so interesting. So you have you actually seen any kind of wildlife finding the caches?
I've seen them. I've seen them in action. I've seen the crows hiding stashes of food. I've seen the squirrels. You know squirrels. They hide their stashes.
They're prolific savers. Yep. We should get them on the financial hour to give some a plug for fiscal responsibility.
But I also see what cued me in on what was going on was that my dogs would go out and follow a very specific trail. They would be sniffing like in this little trail around the edge of the property. And I'm like, what the heck is that? And I figured it out because I saw that's where the caches were. And that's where the scent line of most likely the skunk was coming in at night and digging up the caches of dog food and nuts.
That's interesting. Okay, so I've never actually seen somebody that has visually noticed that, but you learn something new every day. Right. Usually, people that live in kind of suburban Valencia, canyon country, Sauga, so on and so forth, what most of these wildlife are going after, because they are carnivorous, skunks and raccoons, just like I said, the raccoons will go after the snails, oftentimes they'll dig for grubs.
Mm.
Like one of the biggest food caches that they'll find is them going after worms, going after grubs, being the omnivores that they are. They love that meat. Just like we love steak with our vegetable and potatoes, they love meat with their trash and leftover kibble, right? So they'll go after snails. They'll go after grubs. If you lay sod, oftentimes I get called out because when people lay sod, they will just absolutely destroy all the sod. You almost get punished in Santa Clarita for having a pretty yard and being responsible and good with your landscaping. Because people oftentimes mistakenly, when they move from other places, they come to Santa Clarita, they say, oh, well, this is a desert. No, we're not a desert. A desert is the Mojave. A desert is the Sahara. A desert is not the environment we live in. We live in what's called a chaparral environment, where there's, you know, there's oak trees, generally small shrubs, and then the animals and ecosystems that thrive off that. Now, these animals and ecosystems have gotten used to literally drops of water a day. And when all of a sudden you have automatic sprinkler systems, mm-hmm. when all of a sudden you have drip line systems, when all of a sudden you have, you know, a prolific water supply that's been artificially injected into the valley, right. a lot of these smaller animals that constitute the base of the food pyramid, the crickets, the grubs, the earwigs, the silverfish, they thrive. And in turn, the black widows, which eat 8 to 9 crickets a day, well, then all of a sudden they start booming. Okay. Then the raccoons and the skunks that want to be digging around, the moles that go after the worms and things like that will also thrive, because now you have this big, beautiful lawn that's receiving 50 gallons of water a day in order to keep the grass green, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the coolest things about pest control is you kind of become a little mini National Geographic person. I've never seen raccoons or skunks going after the food caches of the squirrels afterwards, but I wouldn't put it past them because almost all squirrel food that you can buy in any of these places have peanuts in it, and the oil from peanuts is super smelly. And rats have a 64 times better sense of smell than dogs even do. And so a lot of these wildlife will find and sense the food that they're going to consume because of the oils in it that smell. So that's pretty interesting. If they're coming after the food caches of your squirrels, I wouldn't put it past him. I have stopped being surprised or impressed by these things because they constantly impress me.
Okay, well, I we only have like 2 minutes left, so I want a quick fact check. Are we bringing Carton back?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So quick fact check before the break. Ankle biter mosquitoes, they don't need water. They can live in moist soil. Yes? No? Any idea?
Yeah, well, there's no scientific classification of ankle biter mosquitoes. All mosquitoes that we have in Southern California are oftentimes perceived as breeding in standing water, which is a place they can breed. But one of the areas that we treat with our mosquito machines is the moist soil, because the number one place where they actually do breed, you're right, is moist soil.
Out of control. That was like a revelation to me. I never heard of that before, but thank you. And when we get back, I want to talk about how you get rid of those daytime biting mosquitoes, which are getting to be a problem here in Santa Clarita.
Oh, yeah, mosquito control's off the charts. Yeah.
Yep. You're listening to the Senior Hour, KHTS, 98.1 FM, AM 1220, hometownstation.com.
When I'm 64.
Welcome back to the Senior Hour. I'm Barbara Cochran with my co-host, Dr. Thomas Pilecki, on your hometown station, 98.1 FM, AM 1220 KHTS. And we're speaking with Carden Ellis of Unipest. And we're talking about getting rid of pests.
That's right.
Yeah. Everybody has to deal with it.
Yes.
You know, at some point, at some level, we are like, very live and let live. And I would take an extra 15 minutes to catch a black widow and release it in the wild. most people be just like, it just step on the thing, right? So we've adopted that policy, but we've had Carden out to the house to deal with, you know, some my fault. You know, I like to feed the ravens and the crows and the pigeons and the squirrels during the daytime, and at night we have some visitors digging up their little cash booties of the dog food, mostly dog food.
Those critters are yucky.
And I don't care about I don't mind that a skunk comes in our yard. I think it's actually kind of cool, but they leave their fleas, and that is was causing us a problem. Our little boy has got some kind of like almost an allergic reaction to flea bites, so it drives him crazy all night long, going nuts. So we gave Carden a call, came over, sprayed some stuff. You know, I can't say it's non-toxic, but it is not
on the dangerous list for animals or children.
Eco and pet friendly.
Pet friendly. Yeah, that'll work. Friendly. Pet friendly. So pet friendly stuff that certainly made a difference. Certainly made a difference.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. I felt okay about it. I felt, I didn't feel like, oh my God, am I killing birds? You know, if this stuff is sprayed in my yards, are birds going to be falling out of the sky because I've done this, or anything for that matter? But no, it just knocked down the flea population. As far as I know, it didn't affect anything else, which is way cool. I know you can't even use chrysanthemum juice in California, right?
Okay. It's not that you can't use it. It's that, wow, how do you actually know that? I think you're the first layman. The first of the uninitiated that have known chrysanthemums are actually part of modern-day pesticides. Okay, so most of the most effective pesticides that are eco-friendly and are used in residential pest control for a while now have been what are called synthetic pyrethroids. Now, before everybody just, goes to sleep and thinks this is all techie talk and super boring, that pyrethrins are actually plant enzymes that are extracted from different types of botanical agents such as chrysanthemum flowers. Right. Ask any of your gardening friends, how do you keep away pests naturally? They'll oftentimes plant around their tomato plants, around their garden, they'll plant chrysanthemums because they're naturally insecticidal agents, right? Well, what happens is scientists have figured out how to synthesize those agents in a safe way, and then now they package them as modern synthetic pyrethroid products. And if used responsibly, so they don't leach into groundwater and things like that, they can actually be a very effective way of keeping away pests. There's lots of natural enzymes. It's interesting. Orange oil, which we use to kill termites, I just did an orange oil job yesterday, is 95% pure D-limonene, mm-hmm. which is actually the extract taken from the rinds of an orange. Have you ever gone to peel an orange and accidentally squirted yourself in the face with some of that rind mist? Yes. And it kind of burns a little bit because it's heavily acidic? Yeah, well, that actually strips the exoskeleton off of a termite inside of the wood that it's infesting. And we found out that that actual natural, it's kind of like basically an essential oil from oranges, is one of the most effective ways of getting rid of termites. So anyway, whether it's like Essentia Organic or Ecovia, which uses geranium oil, rosemary oil, peppermint oil, or whether it's orange oil, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And in your case, it was fleas. In other people's cases, it might be spiders, it might be ants. But there's always going to be a pet-friendly or eco-friendly way of addressing an issue that, if done properly, should work just as effectively as traditional methods. It just might require a little bit more work,
Yep.
In my backyard, I find these. They look like daddy long legs.
Uh-huh.
But they fly.
Oh, crane flies.
Yeah. Oh, how do you know that they're crane flies and not mosquito eaters? Yeah, you go, brother.
Gotta go. So
what do you do with them? Are they dangerous?
No, not at all. They're harmless. They're just, scary because they're so big, but there's nothing wrong with them.
They look straight out of Starship Troopers, but they're harmless.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know whether I should kill them or not because they're up on the patio roof inside.
One last quick plug for UniPlus. So. Please give us your contact information.
Oh, just give us a call. We love our Santa Clarita friends. Call us at 661-BUG-7575. That's 661-284-7575.
Thank you so much for being in the show. It's easy. It's an easy show with you because you do shows here, yeah?
I actually was a board op here intern back in 2011. I was in his seat right there when I was a kid that had just got back from New York before I started my own company. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Senior Hour. We're sponsored by Providence Holy Cross, Comfort Keepers, and iMac Med Spa. Now go out and enhance your quality of life. You've been listening to the Senior Hour, KHTS FM 98.1 AM 1220, hometownstation.com.